welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 284 of the podcast. And it is the 27th of August, 2016, as I record this. And we're not far off episode 300, to be honest. I've got to start planning that because I want that to be something really cool. Anyway, today I have an interview with Rachel Abbott, one of the UK's top crime writers with over 2 million books sold, who is also an indie author and one of my own role models as a successful author and businesswoman entrepreneur. And we talk about how she consistently stays at the top of the UK charts with her books, which marketing strategies she uses, and what has changed since she was last on the show 4 years ago after her first book hit the UK number one, and plus what it takes to be a successful indie author and whether anyone can do it. So that's going to be really interesting. So that is coming up in publishing news this week. Well, a couple of interesting things. One, Mashable reports that Amazon has outstripped Flipkart to become India's biggest online retailer. Now, I think this is really interesting. And I think like, I don't know, 6 months ago or something, there was a report that Amazon was investing millions into trying to grow their sort of Indian site. And I know most of us haven't really seen massive sales through Kindle India, but I do think that this Indian market is super exciting. I've talked about it before, but the fact it's very interesting that Amazon, now Flipkart have said they haven't outstripped them, but even if they're neck and neck, it's a pretty big move into what is a massive market with a growing middle class who like books. So I'm pretty excited about that. Another example of, you know, the future of global book sales. So the other thing that I thought was interesting was in The Guardian, the Hugo Awards see off right-wing protests to celebrate diverse authors. And very happy about this. If you haven't heard, the Hugo Awards for the last, I think, couple of years now have been sort of beset by these groups, the Rabid Puppies being one of them, who are kind of trying to block more liberal books and books by basically non-white, non-male authors. this year, the winner, well, there's lots of winners, but best novel went to N.K. Jemisin's The Fifth Season. And N.K. is a black author who had clashed with the Rabid Puppies coordinator. Also, Binti by Neddy Okorafor scooped best novella. And I've been reading some of Neddy's fiction. And I think she is Nigerian, and I think we talked about her when I interviewed Tolulope Papula on African authors and diversity in publishing back in February. So I'm really pleased to see diversity moving into all these different areas, and it's something I'm very passionate about, as you guys know. Okay, so on personal news, I actually wanted to talk a bit this week before we get into the interview, because I had one of those Facebook moments, and I don't really like posting statuses on Facebook anymore, but when I get these reminders, you know, when you get 5 years ago, this happened, or 3 years ago, this happened, and you get pictures that you posted, that's actually really nice. And I had one of those this week where I got an anniversary post. It was my resignation from 5 years ago when I quit my job. So I'll just read it to you. It said 25th of August, 2011. Okay, so I have resigned. In about 3 weeks, I will be moving to writing and being an entrepreneur online. After 3 years of building up the Creative Pen, it's time to expand and write more novels. Big day. So every year I write a lessons learned post, so that my lessons learned from 5 years will be coming up in 3 weeks' time. And I have been, and I do kind of start writing that at the beginning of every year. So that post is kind of almost finished. And it's really interesting how that's changed every year. But also I wanted to talk about the end of the Olympics, because the Olympics have also marked some big changes in my life. And if you measure your life by Olympic periods, the kind of 4-year period, you can achieve a lot, because so often in 1 year, it's very hard to achieve much. 12 months rushes by so fast. But if you are doing, you know, small things towards your goals, if you look at them over an Olympic period, you can achieve a lot. So I just wanted to challenge you to now have a think about your own writing life over the last few Olympics, and then we'll look forward. So going back to 2008 Beijing Olympics. Now, even if you're not like an Olympic fan, and I mean, I don't watch it on TV or anything, but everyone sees it in the news, and you know, you're probably aware of something around the Olympics. But 2008 Beijing Olympics, I was actually getting married during the Olympics, and I hadn't started the creative pen, hadn't even come up with the creative pen. So I had no website. I had one print book and one nonfiction book that was print only, that was sitting in my front room in boxes. I was living in Brisbane. I was working as a IT consultant. I implemented SAP financials, if you know what that is. And basically, you know, my life was very, very different. I had one income stream, which was my job. And earlier that year, I had been laid off as part of the global financial crisis, and had pretty much determined I was not going to stick with one income. So I definitely had made some changes with my mindset. But at that point, 2008, I literally had nothing, no email list, no, I think I was on Facebook, but wouldn't have, was not about business, no Twitter, no, none of that. So then fast forward to London Olympics 2012. Oh, and also we were living in Brisbane, Australia. So 2012 Olympics, I was living in London. I had quit my job to be a full-time author entrepreneur. I had multiple streams of income, although I was making less money than the Olympics before. It was from multiple streams. I had two novels, I think, as well as several nonfiction books, and I had the creative pen, an email list, and all the, you know, Twitter and the podcast. I started the podcast in 2009, and then 2016 Rio Olympics. I'm living in Bath. This is a bit of a theme. I said to my husband, "Oh dear." And also, if I wind it back, 2004, I was in New Zealand. So pretty much every Olympic period, I move. but yeah, 2016 Rio. I have 20 books and lots of novels. I've had my first multi six-figure income year as an author entrepreneur, and for the first time, surpassed my income from previous incarnation as a consultant, business consultant. My husband has left his day job to join the business, and I'm living in Bath. And so I wanted to kind of challenge you to think about your own journey over the last couple of Olympics. So 2008, 2012, 2016, how much has your life changed in that period? And how much have you worked towards your goals around writing? And then I want to challenge you to look forward to 2020 Tokyo Olympics. What do you want to achieve by 2020? And if you're feeling like you haven't achieved enough, then take heart by, you know, my example here. It's basically, this is what I've been fixated on since 2008. And, you know, thinking about what I want to achieve by 2020, it's kind of crazy, because now I'm thinking, okay, really, I would like to win some kind of award. I'd like to win a Bram Stoker, a horror award. I'd like to win a thriller writers award. I don't mean like a literary award. I mean a genre award. I'd like to sell a screenplay of my books. Obviously, I'd love to see one of my stories in film or TV, but you know, you can't really, that's less of a goal and more of a kind of dream, since so few of them make it. But I definitely like to at least sell screenplays, sell into more foreign markets. I have financial goals around seven figures. I want to be a seven-figure indie. And yeah, so those are some of the things I want to achieve by 2020. But you know, I have a lot of goals around the books I want to write, and I really am starting to make my plans for 2017 around the books I'm going to write. So I think, you know, I just wanted to talk about this because I think sometimes we need to stop and just sit up and go, hey, what am I doing on the bigger scale? What am I working towards in terms of these 4-year periods? So that if I measure my life by what I create, what am I going to do in order to make those goals happen by 2020? So that is my challenge to you guys today. I want you to have a think about 2008, 2012, 2016, and 2020. Just write some things down, you know, have a think about that, and hopefully that will get you on track to achieve amazing things by the next Olympics in Tokyo. Okay, so just as another personal update, I'm super close to finishing the How to Write a Novel course. After I've finished recording this, I'm recording the final two videos, and it will be out. I'll be launching it to my email list in a very sort of quiet manner in the next week or two, and before taking it wider. And I'm so pleased with it. I'm actually really, really pleased with it. And it's helped me so much to nail down my own fiction process, which is why I'm so excited about my next steps with fiction, because I feel like, you know, even though I've written 12 novels, it's kind of a, you know, still a moving target. But I feel like this is going to really help me. The process that I've sort of come up with will help me as well. Right. So thanks as ever for your emails and tweets. I love getting them every week. And in fact, if I don't get them, I start to worry. So please do tweet me at The Creative Pen about what you're up to. So just reading a few of them. Hannah says, I really enjoyed the last podcast with Alan Baxter. I hadn't realized you could do anything with short stories other than using them for marketing. Now I'm considering writing them to sell. Fantastic. Paul says, and this is an excerpt from quite a long email, but Paul says, I'm listening to the podcast as I drive with my family down the Pacific coast to our new home in Santa Barbara. It'll be tight for a while, but writing is now my primary occupation. Fantastic. Congratulations, Paul. Rose Arrowsmith de Coo, which is just such a wonderful name, says, four rooms cleaned with the help from The Creative Pen's dulcet tones and good advice at Art House BB picture. And she sent me a picture of cleaning with rubber gloves, which is cool. Honore says, thanks for the shout out. Here I am at the gym listening. P.S. The miracle morning starts when you do, which is super because it's now, it's almost 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning and I'm pretty much just starting work. yeah, and I know it's Saturday, but I always like to record the intro on a Saturday because I always take Sundays off, but I often work Saturdays. I love my job. I love what I do. Brittany Fichter says, was recently invited to be in a short story anthology, so this episode was much needed. Thank you. And sent a picture of her lovely baby by a plane. And Brittany, it made me think, you know, because Brittany's been sending in pictures since she was pregnant, and I wonder if we'll still be doing this when your baby is a teenager. Jez De Silva says, listening to the show while driving to Langi State Forest in Victoria, Australia, and it just snowed. And it's always amazing to think that while it's hot summer up in the Northern Hemisphere, Australia is in winter. But I also just, if you're on my email lists, which you're on if you've signed up for the at thecreativepen.com/blueprint, I have sent out emails this week for Auckland and Brisbane in February 2017, and also London in November 2016. When I will be doing some live full day sessions on things, either self-publishing success or making a living with your writing. So if you're on my email list, you should have heard about those. If you're not on my email list or you didn't get that email, please email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com, if you want to come to a live event in Auckland or Brisbane in February 2016 or London, November 2016. And I mean Auckland or Brisbane, February 2017. And finally, Amina Cavallo says, inspired by your podcast, I am writing a short story about the antagonist of my first series. Brilliant. So thank you again, everyone, for the emails and tweets. And I love the interaction we have on the show. I really appreciate you getting in touch. So tweet me at The Creative Pen or email joanna@thecreativepen.com. Right. So today's episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life. And as ever, when I think about our global sales, Kobo is always one step ahead because they have that amazing sales map on their on the reporting screen, which I love. So I will play a message from Kobo Writing Life in a minute. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patron, Pam Fenninger. Thank you, Pam. And thanks to everyone supporting on Patreon. Like the tweets and emails, it really demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And on Patreon, you can even just do $2 a month or whatever you like, and you'll get that extra monthly Q&A audio. And you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. All right, so here's a word from Kobo Writing Life, and then we will get on with the interview.
Hi, Creative Pen listeners. This is Mark Lefebvre, Director of Self-Publishing and Author Relations for Kobo. I wanted to provide a little bit of a tip. I often hear from authors who are already selling well on a particular platform, whether it's Kobo, whether it's Kindle, whether it's Nook, or whether it's Apple. Those tend to be the main places that people are selling. If you're already doing well on one platform, that's great. But consider there are other platforms out there. And those platforms each come with their own unique sets of customers. So you may be doing well on one platform, but there's a whole world of customers out there available on the other platforms. Yes, I work for Kobo, and of course I want to have your titles in our catalog. But as an author myself, I strongly advise that authors also make their work available in all of the catalogs, because you never know when that customer who's the ideal customer, who's going to love your writing and tell all their friends and help spread word about how amazing you are as a writer, you never know what platform they're reading on. And that's why it serves you best to be available across all platforms to get the broadest reach for audience in the world. You can find more tips like this available at KoboWritingLife.com. Do come check us out. And if you're looking at making your work available globally, come to Kobo Writing Life and publish your work directly to Kobo's catalog for 190 countries. I'm Mark Lefebvre from Kobo. Now back to your host, Joanna Penn.
And today I'm here with Rachel Abbott. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Joanna.
Well, it's super exciting to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Rachel Abbott is the internationally best-selling author of 6 crime thriller novels, including the recent Kill Me Again. In August 2015, Amazon revealed that Rachel is the UK's best-selling independent author over the last 5 years and is listed at number 14 in the list of UK best-selling authors, both traditional and indie, which is super exciting, outselling authors like Jeffrey Archer and Jojo Moyes, which is amazing. And Rachel, I'm so pleased to have you on the show. You're like a superstar.
Oh, God. Don't say that.
No, but you are. But what's great is you were first on the show back in 2012. And your first book, Only the Innocent, came out and reached the top of the UK charts. But I wondered if you could give us an update, like, you know, going back to that first book, over four years ago, what has changed in your writing career? And, you know, give us an update.
So much has changed. I can't believe it's actually 4 years ago. I can still remember sitting out, because I was actually in Italy when you did the last one. And now, of course, I'm in Alderney. So I do, now I spend part of my time in Italy and part of my time in Alderney. So that's one change, because I'd never even heard of Alderney 4 years ago. And now I live here. So,
and for people who don't know, what is Alderney?
Oh, Alderney is a tiny island in the Channel Isles. It's close to Guernsey. And there's only 2,000 people on the island, and it's full of white sandy beaches and turquoise seas and a lot of people who like to party. So it's a great place to live.
It is. And so what else has changed?
Well, oh, loads. So since I spoke to you, I don't know when it bounced in 2012 it was that I spoke to you. But since then, I've got an agent, which is the best decision I ever made. I've written 4 more full-length novels and 1 novella. My books have been now published in over 20 languages worldwide. I know, I'm just absolutely amazed by that. That's just fantastic. And I've sold over 2 million copies. And so it's been pretty good, really.
It has been pretty good. And to be sort of in the top 15 of all UK authors.
Oh, that was just amazing. I mean, it was nice to hear that I was the number one independently published author. That's always a really great thing to know. But to know that I was so high up in the list of of all writers, including some of my favourites who weren't even there. I thought, oh, my goodness. Of course, that is on the Kindle, you know. Mm. I mean, it's not paperback sales and things like that, obviously. That's not an – I do sell paperbacks, but not in the quantities that you'd expect from, you know, one of the traditionally published authors.
Mm. So. And I mean, you mentioned you have an agent and you know, you're in these multiple languages, but are you still an indie, just so people know, or how are you publishing?
Yes, I am definitely independently published. Apart from the foreign language ones, they are published by traditional publishers all over the world. But in the UK, I'm entirely independently published. And in the States, my first two books are published traditionally, but I didn't go ahead with that for the subsequent books because they were looking for world English rights and I wasn't prepared to give up my UK rights. So unfortunately, decided that was more important to me. So even though I've got an agent, I am still independently published.
Yeah, fantastic. I just wanted everyone to know that because some people think that as soon as you hit number one on Amazon or you get in the charts, like you sign with an agent, you go traditional and that's it. But you're a businesswoman, right?
Yeah. And my agent is very savvy, very smart lady. In fact, she's agent of the year this year. So she's very smart and she's guided me all the way through. Obviously, after Only the Innocent, there was a possibility I could have signed with a traditional publisher. And she said, well, I think you should do one or two more, really, just to build your name, build your profile. And then that would maybe make it easier to find the right match for you in terms of a publisher. And so we've worked together and we discuss all the time which is the right route to go. I'm not against traditional publishing in any way, shape or form. But at the moment, this has been working for me. So,
yeah,
stick with what works, really.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then I remember when you were on the show, you said, I mean, you published that first book without having it edited, right?
No.
So how has your writing process changed and what your writing craft?
Oh, so much. I mean, I didn't have it. I had it proofread, obviously, and a lot of people don't really understand the difference between editing and proofreading. And I don't think I did, if I'm honest. I think that I thought an editor did the proofreading and then if they thought anything wasn't very good, they changed it. I don't know where I got that idea from. Anyway, Only the Innocent, which was my first book, that after I got an agent, it was subsequently edited. And when I saw what an editor does and how they change, they don't change things, but they recommend things for you to do and how you might change something, it was a revelation, to be honest. So now it's very different now. So now I put together a synopsis of what I'm going to write and I send that to my agent who says, yeah, but what about this? And do you think this is the right age for the protagonist? And do you think that there's going to be a big enough twist at the end of it? And she asks me all these questions, which make me sort of want to slit my throat. You know? Oh, I've not thought of that. I've not thought of that. It can be quite, you know, it's quite, you've got to be fairly tough, I think, in this life. And so when I've written the first about 20,000 words, I send her that and she then comments on that, which sometimes results in me completely rethinking, to be honest. Sometimes, mostly doesn't, occasionally it does. And then when I've finished the whole thing, it goes off to her and she reads it and she has a reader who's also an editor and she comes in. And so it's read by about six people and comments fed back to me at all kinds of levels. And then I pay for a copy editor and a proofreader. So it's a much, much longer process now. It's not a case of writing it and sticking it up on the Kindle.
Although that did, you know, did work for you the first time around. But I think, you know, yeah, no worries. So one of the other things that I love having people back on the show since, you know, the show's been running years now, since 2009. And what's great is, you know, you and I have both seen people come into the industry, write a book, disappear. You've, you know, just gone up and up. What do you think keeps you growing and producing great books? What keeps the customers coming back, basically? Because so many authors seem to have, like, you know, the people who have a one hit might not make it on the second hit. But, you know, you seem to be really consistent. So what is it, do you think, that keeps people coming back?
I think that although the books are different, they're all very different, they're completely different stories, Although I've got a series character in Tom Douglas, who's the policeman, he's never the main character. So a lot of people don't actually realise that. A lot of people think he is the main character, but he isn't. All of my books tend to have the need of a policeman, so therefore he's the same one who comes up over and over again. But the stories aren't about him. They're about people who are perhaps similar to my own readers, who've got dilemmas and, you know, what would you do if you were put in this set of circumstances, or if you found out that your husband was a killer, what would you do? And so there are lots of scenarios that I hope that people can relate to. And I think that quite often, if you've got a series character who is the main protagonist, sometimes the books can be quite similar because that character is similar. But although I've got him, the main characters, the main protagonists of my story are all quite different, with very different dilemmas. I'm hoping that's what makes it work.
Well, that is, it is a really good point, because I've read three of your books, I think. I haven't read them all, but I've read three. And I did notice this guy's come back again, but he's not the main character. And I did actually actively notice that. But until you said that, I hadn't thought that that would make the books more original and seem more standalone. But I think you're right. That's actually, are there any other writers who do that? I'm just trying to think.
I actually don't know. There are quite a lot of writers who I love, people like Val McDermott, Sharon Bolton, people like that, who have series characters and quite often write books that haven't got those characters in. So Val McDermott with Tony Hill and Carol Jordan, and Sharon Bolton with Lacey Flint. But she's just written a completely standalone one now. So they quite often have standalone books as well as their series characters. Mm. But mainly people who've got series characters, as far as I can work out, they are mainly the protagonist, and mine isn't.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. There's a trick.
it wasn't intentional. I'd like to say that it was a very clever move, but actually it was not intentional at all.
Oh, I love it. And then that's what keeps, well, maybe what keeps the readers coming back. What keeps you inspired? Because many people are like, oh, if I only hit the charts, or if I only sold this many books, then, you know, maybe I'd have made it. What keeps you coming back and writing more?
The readers, really. I mean, they're so enthusiastic. They're so amazing. The number of messages that I get on Facebook, on Twitter, emails, all kinds of things. And they're so enthusiastic. When's the next book? When's the next book? And I feel that I owe them that, really. I think that that's one of the things. And also, of course, I love writing. I love telling stories. So, you know, those are the two things really that drive.
So the other thing I wanted to know is what has changed in terms of how you market a book? Because, you know, when we talked, you know, back in 2012, it seemed like your first book, you really focused on book bloggers, for example. We really talked about that. And you had gone very hard in relationships with book bloggers and pitching them. And, you know, so how has your marketing changed? You know, what has stopped working, and what does work now? Well, just start and we'll discuss it. Okay. There were too many questions there.
Okay. So I think with Only the Innocent, I spent quite a lot of time on forums. So they just started the Amazon Meet Our Authors forum, and I found on that forum there were lots of people like me who were writing maybe their first book, maybe not their first book, but they were just getting into writing for the Kindle. And everybody used to share, you know, everybody used to pass around stuff. Have you read this book by such and such a person? And people talked about it. And that's changed a lot now. I think if you go onto most of these forums, a lot of the people are just other authors who just cut and paste the next ad for their next book and then they move off. People don't seem to talk to each other in the same way. Because I can remember with Only the Innocent, when it really started to go up the charts very, very quickly, I put something on a forum saying, I don't know what's happening. It's suddenly going berserk, which was lovely. And somebody responded, check out this forum. And I went to a forum and people were talking about it. So it wasn't the Meet Our Authors forum, but somebody from the Meet Our Authors forum, God, that's a mouthful, authors forum, had gone on and promoted my book in another, you know, as a reader. And that had really helped, but that doesn't seem to work anymore. So I still, with the book bloggers, I still send copies of my books for review to book bloggers. We have a database of reviewers, and we send them a very almost like what I think the publishers call an AI sheet, which is all the information that you might need, an author's information sheet with a picture of the cover, the blurb for the story, a bit of detail about how many books I've sold. So I get quite a lot of people prepared to review it based on that.
Mm. And so on the forums, I mean, I would say now that was probably been mainly replaced by Facebook groups.
Yes.
So how are you using Facebook? Because really in 2012, we weren't using Facebook to market books. I mean, maybe we weren't even on Facebook. I can't remember. But so how has that changed?
I use Facebook. I always think with Facebook, I have more success than anything, even though I've probably only got about 4,500 followers on Facebook and 10,000 on Twitter. But on Facebook, there's about 4,500, but they are really keen and enthusiastic. And, you know, I can put out a post and I can see that it's been seen by maybe 3,500 people and shared. And as you know, if you've got a Facebook page and you post on average, it's only seen by about 4% of the people who actually like your page, because that's the way Facebook works and they want you to promote the page, which, of course, we do. But, you know, not always. But sometimes it just happens. Sometimes it's just kind of people are interested and they share. And that's brilliant. And so I use Facebook. I don't post on it all the time, but I do when I've got anything that I think people might be interested in. And the other thing that I do is I always, when I'm launching a new book, I always have a Facebook party. Now, people think this is a really weird thing to do, because why would anybody want to go to a party on Facebook? But we put a huge, huge amount of effort into the Facebook parties. Every single post is planned so that there's something for the people watching to join in on. So it might be a competition, it might be upload a picture. So we had one this year about the pose for a dead body or something. You wouldn't believe the number of people who had pictures of themselves posing as a dead body. It was just hysterical, honestly. It was such good fun. And we give lots of prizes, and we have, I was going to say goodie bags, but we call them baddie bags, obviously. And so, but that's really, that's not really a promotion. That's really to say thanks to the people who have been so committed and following all the time. Mm. And but I think the best thing in terms of promotion is the mailing list, you know, having a decent mailing list of people who have shown that they already like your books and they've chosen to join your mailing list. That I think makes a big difference.
Yeah, and there are lots of people know that you should have a mailing list, you should build your Facebook group, etc. But a lot of fiction authors in particular don't know what to share. So there are some great examples there of things that you do on promotion, you know, launch day. But what type of things are you sharing with your email list or with your Facebook group or page at, on a normal level, like between books? What are you sharing then?
Any promotions. So if we've got any books that are on special offers, I share that, obviously, because it gives people an opportunity to buy them, usually for 99p. So people do tend to appreciate that. So I share information, I share bits if I've been on some really nice holiday and stuff, because the readers, I don't share what I've had for dinner and what I've had for breakfast, you know, but if I've been somewhere quite interesting and exotic, so people can be quite interested in, they're never pictures of me. I hate pictures of me with a passion. So I just share pictures of birds and things, you know, but I do that. But the more important thing really is with the newsletter that I send out to people who have joined my newsletter list, my mailing list. So we're starting to do a monthly newsletter now. We used to do it more, less regularly than that, but we do a monthly newsletter, but it's not all about me, because I don't think they just want to know about me. So I read a lot, as you might expect. So I'm starting doing review of up to about 4 books that I've read. I only write positive reviews. So if I don't like it, it doesn't go in the list. We've got competitions on there and lots of things for people to engage with, really. We quite often put competitions on Facebook as well. Mm. So there's stuff like that for people to get involved in. I think at the moment we've got a competition to win free Audible downloads and stuff like that. So there's usually something that we can think of that will engage people.
Yeah, and I'm on your list, and I just got your thing about
the newsletter.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Book reviews. I do book reviews too, and I agree with you that I think this is something that you realize when you become an author, to only post good reviews, because you can really piss off people that you end up meeting, right?
I won't do it. I will never so I get, because I'm very fortunate now, I get sent quite a lot of books by publishers to read and comment on, and I will never comment positively on a book that I don't like. Mm-hmm. I just say, I'm sorry, I've not had time to read it, or something. I will only comment positively, because I don't think there's anything to be gained by being negative about people who are competitors. I just don't think it's the right thing to do. Because I don't like it doesn't mean it's not a good book. It means that it just didn't work for me.
Exactly. So, and I think it's so important with the world we live in as well, because you do tend to meet other authors over the years. And,
of course.
And then it's like, oops. So, yeah, be careful. So I was wondering there, you know, just on the mailing list. So how do you continue to build your mailing list? What are your is it just that in the back of your book it says join my mailing list, or do you do anything advertising wise?
The most important is the one in the back of the book. So in the back of each Kindle book, there's a link. So if you click on it, it takes you to a website where you can fill in the details. And I get new people every single day signing up to that list. And they're the best. So, yes, I do some of the Facebook advertising stuff. I think that's been, I mean, a lot of people do that very successfully. And I did, and I got a lot of names on my list, which was great. But they'd all signed up for something free. And so what I do now is, when I send out anything at all, I've kept the list separate. So I've got a list of the people who have actually joined because they've enjoyed my books. And I've got the list of people who've joined because there was something free that they were getting. And the difference between the response rates between the two is quite extraordinary. Mm-hmm. So the people who have actually joined up because they want to read my books, the response rate, the click-through rate, the open rate is so much better than the other one. So although I'll still do the rest of it, I'll still do the Facebook adverts to get people to come on board, because it's still very useful. The actual the quality of the leads that you get through that is not as good as the leads that you get through people actually liking your books.
No, fantastic. And then just coming back to the book bloggers, one thing that's been opened up to indies is NetGalley, which traditional publishers yes. have used. And on NetGalley, of course, book bloggers can get ebook versions of traditionally published books. You know, it used to all be hardback. Now, so two questions. One, do you do ebook and paperback ARCs for reviewers? And secondly, what do you think about NetGalley?
So in terms of paperbacks, yes, I do. So they can get ebooks or paperbacks. So I usually have a print on demand version of the paperback done very quickly, so that that's available as an advanced copy for mainly some bloggers, but a lot of them are quite happy with an ebook. But I've got a PR agent now, a publicist, and she sends out books to the mainstream reviewers, and they will only take a book. So she sends them to reviewers, and she also sends them to magazines and festival organisers, things like anybody who she thinks might be interested. In terms of NetGalley, I haven't used it. And I think part of the reason I haven't used it is because I don't really know properly how it works. My understanding is that lots of people can actually download with, but according to my publicist, she says that she would get the requests and then she could decide whether to let people have them or not, mm-hmm. which is fine, but I'm not quite sure how people would react if you said, no, you're not having one. Is that kind of the equivalent of giving a bad review? No, I'm not giving one to you. You know, it's almost offensive, isn't it? To be honest.
Yeah, no, I understand. And I've seen things in Facebook groups again with people getting offended and this type of thing. So it is a very careful space to step around. But I wonder, I mean, you mentioned their publicist. And of course, we're indie authors, but we don't do everything ourselves, do we? You mentioned your agent. I believe you have more than one virtual assistant, one or more.
I have a virtual assistant and a personal assistant.
And a personal assistant.
So they're both part-time.
So can you maybe talk about how what does your role look like in your business now? And are there any other people that might be useful to mention in terms of what they do for you? How do those tasks go to them so that you can do the writing?
Well, my personal assistant comes into the office twice, maybe three times a day. And when she's not here, she uses a piece of software called Sprout Social. So she goes on and checks all my Twitter lists to see which ones I need to respond to. If people have retweeted things, she thanks everybody. I really wouldn't have time to do that. It takes her about an hour and a half a day, 7 days a week. She tends to do it on a Saturday and a Sunday as well. I've not asked her to do that, can I just point out? But she says she'd rather do that than do 3 hours of it on a Monday morning, which I kind of understand. So she does that, but she also, as she comes into the office, and there's nearly always some books to be sent out to people, so she deals with all of that. She does... she proofreads any of my online question and answer things because I get an awful lot of interviews. So I write them quickly. She proofs them. She used to be an editor. So she edits them and makes them make sense and gets rid of any garbage that I've written. You know, just sort of madly typing away and trying to get as much as you can on. She manages the accounts to send to the accountant. And she does lots of everything you'd expect a PA to do, really. And then my virtual assistant, who is in Canada, who you know well, is a complete star.
Yeah, she's both of ours, both of our virtual assistants.
Yes, she is. And she's fantastic because she's quite technical. So she can manage the blog and she can manage the databases and she can do a lot of that technical stuff. So we're redesigning the blog at the moment and I've done some work on the design. And then I just send her the content and she puts it up there as the categories and stuff. I think people need to kind of appreciate that if you are a self-published author and you do become reasonably successful, there's a huge amount of stuff to do. My desk is a tip. I wish I could point this down. It is absolutely covered in stuff because there is so much that comes through the door all the time. Well, not through the door and obviously online as well, but there's a massive amount of stuff to do. So, you know, it does takes quite a bit of managing.
Yeah, and I think that the more successful you are, the more you get those requests, right? Because, yes. You know, I get more requests for Joanna Penn than JF Penn. I would like more for JF Penn. But it is, you know, I totally get what you're saying. There's loads of it. But people at the beginning often can't imagine why you would have that much to do. You know, and why don't you just write? So what do you enjoy? I mean, because this is the other thing I wanted to ask you. Do you think anyone can do this job? Or what are the skills that you need to do this job?
So I think that's a really tricky question. I think that you have to be prepared to work very hard. I think that is fundamental to it. You have to be able to put in the hours and enjoy it because there's no point doing it if it's going to be a complete slog. But I would say that roughly half of my time is spent on admin, even though I've got a personal assistant, a virtual assistant, a publicist, and an agent and an accountant. But, you know, in spite of that, I still spent about 50% of my time. So this week alone, I will probably have done 5 interviews. Mainly not like this one. This is easy. I like these. These are easy because I can just talk to you. I'm just talking to Joe. So that's great. But the ones that actually question and answers that I have to type up, I enjoy doing them. It's not an issue, but they all take time. And then the sales figures come in from the agent. So you've got to check through all those and make sure that they all what you're expecting them to be. So there is an endless stream of stuff to do, particularly when you're dealing with foreign transactions as well, because you get the contracts in, which I have to say, I never read any of them. I just trust my agents have got it right. So I just sign them, but they've got to be signed, initialed on every page. And so it's just, there is just a sort of constant stream of admin stuff. And anytime we've got any special offers on, we make a big effort about publicising that to let people know. So my PA then will design loads of tweets that she sets up to come up at different times. And there's just, you know, it's just endless, really.
It is. And I agree with you. It is a full-time business. It's like a small business in a way, because we don't have loads of employees or anything. But it is a kind of all-encompassing life. I think it really is a life. And I wondered how it does compare with your previous life in business, because you've been a businesswoman for a long time. How does being an author compare with your previous businesses in terms of, yeah, just everything?
So it's more fun. So I enjoyed my life running a business, but I had at one time about 100 staff. So that brings its own headaches. And all I did then was manage. I didn't do anything. I didn't actually produce anything. I just managed. And so that had its own rewards. But this is much more fun. Much more fun. And my PA is an editor, as I said, or was an editor, but she's now a writer and is very, very funny. So when she's in, we have quite a good laugh. But there's just two of us. So I don't have to deal with a load of traumas of, you know, all the kind of HR things that I used to have to deal with, and then going to board meetings and having to produce board reports. It used to make me laugh, really, that, you know, if you say effectively you work 20 days a month, one day you'd be preparing a board report, one day you would be actually at the board meeting. That's 2 days out of 20. That's a pretty significant amount of time reporting on what you're doing. So there was an awful lot of that game, and, you know, so it's much better to be being creative. Even when I'm doing the blog, I'm being creative.
Yeah, and I think that's the most important thing for people to remember, is business is creative, right?
Yes.
All of it. So it's not just the putting words into a document for a story, it's everything else that makes up the author's life.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
So thinking all the time about what next you're going to do that readers are going to enjoy. You know, you're doing it for the readers.
Super. Now, I did want to ask you, because as you said, you've sold over 2 million books, and you know, you're just one of the top people in England, in the UK, sorry. And but in The Guardian, there was an article in March, you said you still deal with snobbery as an indie author. So I was really interested about that. How are things different than 2012?
Can I just say that The Guardian do tend to invent their own headlines?
Oh, okay.
Exactly what I said. They've done it before. The last one that they wrote, the headline was something like, "My success is all down to me," which is not what I said at all. What I said is, if it all goes wrong, it's all down to me. So success or fail, as a self-published author, you've got nobody else to blame, is what I was trying to say. But, of course, they use that as a headline. Oh, my goodness me. I couldn't believe it. So, but it is true that there are still some people out there who firmly believe that I'm self-published because nobody will publish my books. And I would like to think, and I would like to believe, that maybe if I wanted a publisher now with the track record that I've got, that would be possible. And it has been suggested to me more than once that it is possible. But there are certain people who just don't get it, that we actually, some of us, remain self-published because we want to. I'm not saying I'll always remain self-published. I think there's lots to be said for being with a traditional publisher. And the time might come when actually all this other stuff that I have to do, I will be just so happy to hand it over to somebody. As far as I'm concerned, that's been my choice. But there are still some people out there who, A, feel, I think, maybe irritated by the fact that some self-published authors are doing very well, and maybe their books aren't doing so well. And that must be pretty galling, really, if they've got a traditional deal, they've been through all the process, somebody's signed them up, and they're still not selling very many copies. So that must be quite galling. And so I think that's why maybe some people can be a bit, oh, you're just self-published.
Yeah, and it's funny that, I mean, you know, we both know quite a lot of traditionally published authors as friends, and it always surprises me how little people are actually earning in the traditional industry. And even when you're in the charts, they might be quite high up in the UK charts, for example, but the reality is that the numbers of books sold are quite low in general. So do you see, on the flip side, do, you know, and no names or anything, but do people approach you from the other angle and go, hey, Rachel, you know, maybe tell me about being indie. I don't want my publisher to know, but are people asking you on the sly?
Yes. Yes, they are. I've met a very well-known author recently on I tend to every now and again take myself off to some kind of spa place somewhere, you know, where I can be starved, because when I'm working and when I'm really struggling, I tend to eat biscuits, which, you know, takes its toll. So every now and again, I take myself off to somewhere like the Mayo Clinic in Austria or somewhere like that. And I've met there a couple of authors, one of whom is very well known and was actually been nominated for a Man Booker Prize. So really good. And he said to me, what do I have to do to make money? Because I'm not making any with my publishers. And I said, well, I don't really know how to answer that, because it depends on the kinds of books. His are very literary books, and it's a completely different ball game, really. You know, my books are commercial books. They're books that can be read by anybody. His books are very specific to a certain type of reader. So it is difficult. But even some of the people who write commercial fiction have asked me. But then when I tell them the truth about what it entails, they run for the hills, you know. Oh, my God, I can't do all that. And I don't blame them either. I started there, so it's easy for me to carry on. But to change from having everything done for you and to then start to have to do everything for yourself, I think that's a much more difficult transition.
No, you're right. And it was funny, I was reading about James Patterson, who, of course, actually has his whole department at the publisher.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like 20 people working for him, even though they're within the publisher. You know, he pretty much runs a department of people. Yeah. But I think, you know, there's that level. Even if you went into a publisher at this point, it's unlikely you would have a whole team. I mean, you would still only get a publicist in the month of publication. I mean, I still believe, well, most people seem to say that authors have to do the marketing regardless of how they're published. And that's why some of those people, you know, are just not getting anywhere, because the publishers aren't doing it and the authors aren't doing it either.
Yeah, I think that's true, actually. I think a lot of people think that their publisher should be doing it, so they don't do it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily the case, as you say, and they do get publicists for a reasonably narrow period of time. I originally took my publicist on for 6 months, but I've kept her on all year because she's ace. She's really good. And she's not busy all the year round, but when she is busy, she's really busy. So it works out very well. But it must be frustrating to only have somebody for a week or a month or something.
So just on the publicist, because some people think that that is the answer. With people who think that they want a publicist, I mean, it's not an insignificant expense. What can people expect from a publicist, and who does it suit, basically?
The thing about PR is it's very difficult to quantify the returns from PR. So if your publicist managed to get you a speaking engagement at a festival, A, you probably won't get paid. I sometimes get offered the money, but if it's a charitable thing, I always waive my fee anyway. So you're not doing it for money. And how many books will you realistically sell? Mm. So you've got to work out why you're doing it. And the reason why I want a publicist is because I want people to have heard of my name. And it is very difficult to define what the returns from that will be. But if somebody's on Amazon and they see my book and they think, oh, I've heard of Rachel Abbott, I might give that a try. And it's as vague as that. You know, obviously she does quite a lot of stuff getting reviews and gets me lots of articles in magazines and stuff. But again, you know, if you look at the sales figures, just because I got a brilliant review in Good Housekeeping magazine, there was no obvious rise in sales for that day.
Mm.
But that's what PR is all about. It's about building up awareness of who you are and of people knowing who you are and having heard of you. So you're constantly trying to get your name and your book cover in front of people so that when they do see it somewhere, when they are out to buy something, yours is the first one that springs to mind.
It is hard to quantify. And so I would say that for newbie authors or people without a budget, that hiring a publicist is not a
waste of time.
Yeah, not a good start. Okay, so we're almost coming to the end, but I wonder, you know, looking forward, I hope it won't be 4 years until I have you back on the show. But if you think about, you know, I mean, that would be 2020. I mean, scary stuff. Do you have, you know, what are your ambitions? You know, when you've sold this many books and you've hit these charts and everything, do you have writing ambitions, or is it, you know, is it more lifestyle ambitions? Or what are you looking to do in the next 4 years? It's a big question.
Thanks, Jo. What am I looking to do? I want to write even better books. I want them to get better and better and better. It's really important to me that I feel as if each time I write, I'm getting better at my craft. Not necessarily the stories any better, because sometimes, you know, sometimes the early stories are better than the more recent ones and vice versa. But it's more about me getting better at writing. So that's really important to me. But apart from that, I just want to keep on writing and have people love my books, really. I've not got any specific target, any specific goal in mind. I want to, write enough so that I can have nice holidays. I do like having nice holidays, a couple of those a year. And, you know, that's about it, really. I just really enjoy it and meeting some great people, readers and other writers, which I love meeting other people. That's great fun. But if I start to find that people aren't enjoying my writing, I'll stop.
Mm. Oh, okay. Or write something else, you know, maybe.
I'd probably stop. If I didn't think people were enjoying it, then that would mean that somewhere along the line I'd lost the, whatever it was, lost the edge, and then I would stop.
Oh, interesting.
I'm getting old, you know.
No, you're not. You go to the spa.
Yeah, I go to the spa.
And they rejuvenate you. No, that's awesome. And I mean, maybe there'll be an Alderney Writers Festival sometime.
Oh, there's an Alderney Literary Festival every year. So I'm a trustee of the Alderney Literary Trust, and we have one big event each year, which is usually historical. So it's for historical novels, it's fact and fiction. And so that's a great event, really good. And then I think this November we're having some of the killer women over for, so you know about the killer women. Yeah. So if the people watching this don't know, this is a team of authors that are based mainly in the south of England, and they all write thrillers. So they call themselves the killer women. And they're coming over in November. Some of them are coming over in November to do a murder weekend sort of event. So, so Alderney is a great place for things like that. Full of people who write and paint and otherwise get drunk, actually.
That's what I so have to come.
Very welcome.
Thank you. Okay, so where can people find you and your books, and what is the latest book that everyone should go check out?
The latest book is Kill Me Again, and that came out in February, and that's available in paperback, and it's available obviously for the Kindle, and you should be able to get the paperback in bookshops. You might have to order it, because as an independent author it's more difficult to get your books on the bookshelves, but they should all be able to order it because it's in the mainstream ordering system, or from Amazon.
Fantastic. And your website?
The website is www.rachel-abbott.com.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Rachel. That was great.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you, Jo.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.